SAFM, 6.5 minutes past 8 on this Tuesday morning. Now, electronically speaking, do you know what your child is up to? Have you noticed that they're possibly spending what some might say are productive or unproductive hours on their cell phone, not in conversation necessarily, but using the text function, communicating to a group of friends? At least we assume they're friends. No guarantees about who is necessarily in that user group. Now, apart from the amazing dexterity using that tiny keyboard, what is actually under discussion? Should we be worried? What about basic communication skills? The text language of the cell phone is vastly different from the spoken word. It's a universe, it seems, of abbreviation and single-layered thoughts. What's a service like Mixit actually doing to our children's communication skills? Then, of course, there are the computer social networking tools like MySpace and Facebook. You essentially create your own web page, build a set of friends or contacts, and interact with them in cyberspace. I've heard stories of teenagers sitting in front of their screens for hours engaging in a one-dimensional social life. Surely that can't be healthy. On the flip side, though, maybe being behind a desk is being a lot safer. It's better than being on the streets. But then again, no human interaction means a stilted social personality. Or does it? Whichever way you look at it, social networking tools are here to stay. They're popular and fill some type of void. But what is that void? Should parents gatekeep when it comes to this type of activity and communication? What are the dangers? Social isolation? Poor social skills? And also, are they a fora for paedophiles to groom victims? We've heard that story on many, many occasions before. There are always loopholes, and surely that's a problem when it comes to verification in the invitation process. Lots to talk about this morning, and something possibly to worry about. In response to the criticism, the creator of Mixit, Herman Hiernes, has called on parents to take responsibility for their children using the service. So, what do parents need to do? In terms of South African law, Mixit cannot be held liable for the content of user messages or the abuse of technology by users and others. So taking all of that into consideration, we're going to ask this question this morning. Are online social networking tools such as Mixit, MySpace and Facebook retarding our children's ability to communicate? Welcome to the After 8 debate. Sitting in Johannesburg with me this morning, Ramon Thomas, who is Managing Director of Netucation. It's an online blogging website. He is a well-known speaker on this issue at various forums around the country. A little later on, Lynn Kaywood is going to join us, Director of Childline in Gauteng, and on the line to the After 8 debate this morning, Director at of Strategy at Worldwide Works, Stephen Ambrose. If you'd like to participate in our conversation this morning using that old-fashioned technology called the telephone, you can give us a call on 0891 104208. You can also text us as well if you want to on 34701. Ramon Thomas, a very good morning to you, first of all. Maybe just as some form of background, very quickly for the uninitiated, let's just give some description, if we can, of tools like Mixit, Facebook, MySpace. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, this is an entirely new way of communicating using technology. So Mixit is an instant messaging platform that's different from SMS and email because it's instantaneous communication. With SMS and email, there could be delays. The person may or may not respond. The whole incentive with Mixit, it's immediate and instantaneous. With Mixit also, you've got chat rooms that you can talk to multiple people at the same time. And the system itself is becoming a distribution platform for content from companies and what I call micro-content, little bits of information in text and images and now also audio. Facebook and MySpace are social networking websites where you create a profile with photos, images, you describe yourself, and then the whole incentive is to hook up with friends and chat with them. And every time you update your profile, they will get notifications. So it sort of, let's say, reduces the burden of communicating with them.
Stephen Ambrose, a very good morning to you. How widely are these tools used, and what's the general profile of the user?
Well, that's a multi-part. Good morning. How are you doing, Jeremy?
Nice to talk to you.
That's a multi-part question. In essence, the tools are very widely used. A very good analogy, and this came out of some research we did a little while ago. A researcher was talking, it's a bit of a story, but it'll explain the point. A researcher was talking to a young lady who was sitting at a desk. She was playing on her cell phone. She had a computer in front of her. And she started getting a bit irritated that this girl wasn't listening to her and completing the survey as she said she would. And she said, well, doesn't all this technology distract you? And this girl looked up at her and said, what technology? And here she was sitting on her cell phone, obviously on Mixit, typing on her computer, totally connected in a way that a couple of years ago none of us could ever envisage. So the technology is very widespread.
Let me bring into the conversation now Lynn Kaywood, Johannesburg or Gauteng director of Childline. Lynn Kaywood, a very good morning to you. Now, let me quote Ramon Thomas. He says, since its development, all of this has been hailed as one of the biggest local success stories to date. However, someone called Antoinette Basson, who's a psychologist at the Films and Publication Board, has called all of this technology that Ramon and Stephen have referred to as a big problem. The board is investigating. From a social perspective, how worried should we be?
Well, certainly the technology is here to stay, and there are certain very good advantages in terms of communication, sharing of information, empowering people in that way. Unfortunately, it is abused by people in a sexual manner. There is an absolute explosion of sexuality all around us all the time, some of it positive and some of it less positive. Mixit has been used to distribute child pornography and violent images in the recent past. It also has been utilized for cyberbullying and, the distribution of hate speech. So there's an enormous amount of education that has to go with this technology to ensure that children are kept safe from premature sexualization.
All right, Ramon Thomas, you're nodding your head and simultaneously shaking it at the same time.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to go back to something that you asked, Steve, and there's the quick numbers. Facebook is currently sitting at over 250,000 South Africans. It's likely to be more than that because they're not all linked up with the South African network. MySpace is about 200,000, but most of my friends on MySpace have moved over to Facebook, so it's the same people. Mixit has just crossed 5 million users. So that's the numbers.
In this country?
In this country, yes. In terms of what Lynn has just said, there's some photographs of a girl that's been circulated, and it was written up in the Sunday Times. Not published, but just written up and mentioned. I don't believe
this is via
Mixit.
Via Mixit.
Okay, but I don't believe that those particular photos of that girl that was nude came from Mixit. Mixit, the way it works with photographs, only certain models and makes can send photos, and only certain people can store those photos if they are a Mixit Freestyler subscriber. So unlike Facebook or an internet website where millions of people can access photos and download it, Mixit just allows one-on-one distribution of photos.
Mm. Stephen Ambrose, be that as it may, I still detect a loophole there.
A loophole in terms of spreading pornography?
In terms of undesirable distribution?
You know, in any social setting, I mean, if young people get together on a Saturday night and start talking, in the good old days they used to share their somewhat risque magazines with each other, certainly young men and that. So I don't think anything has actually changed. I do believe that technology has made it a lot more convenient and a lot easier. But Ramon is right. Mixit as a platform for widely distributing pornography or images that are not appropriate is not a great platform. The internet is far more dangerous in that regard.
And Lynn Kaywood, would you have to concede that point, surely?
Well, I think that the reality is that we have to take responsibility for the technological capability that we put into the world. So I think that it's really incumbent on the Mixit providers and as the internet providers to regulate the service delivery, to reduce the amount of harmful content that children are able to access.
Ramon Thomas, the head of the Independent Democrats, Patricia de Lille, recently calling on government to, and I quote, urgently look at implementing legislation that will regulate Mixit and internet blogging, where members of the public can, with impunity, slander and defame individuals and organizations they don't like. Obviously, one of her high-profile members has been involved in a fairly well-documented case. We don't necessarily go into that. But I would suggest to you that this is almost impossible to regulate, surely.
It is extremely difficult. If you look at the volume of messages on Mixit, it's doing now in excess of 250 million messages per day. If the company had to invest in infrastructure to record all those messages, it would probably go bankrupt within days.
So the genie is out the bottle.
The genie is out of the bottle. Myself and Lynn was involved in a panel discussion with Lawyers for Human Rights called How to Protect Minors from Harmful Content on Cell Phones. And the outcome of that discussion between industry, myself, Childline, Sun and various other NGOs was that we need both. We need self-regulation as well as governmental regulation. So we need a combination of what's called co-regulation. And so there does exist a legal framework, and some of the measures just hasn't been implemented. I always hamper on this particular aspect of the cyber inspectors mentioned in Section 10 of the ECT Act in 2002. It became law. They have still not. It's 5 years later, and they've still not been appointed. Because my biggest concern is if there's any incidents that occur where we need law enforcement to investigate, the typical law enforcement people do not have the skills to investigate and gather evidence electronically.
Lynn Kay, would a horny 16-year-old teenager is not going to self-regulate?
This is true. This is absolutely true. And I do think that it's up to the adult generation, especially the service providers, to provide regulations and, stimulate education and debate so that young people can engage with this issue, and deal with their developing sexuality in a responsible manner. You know, I hear what your speakers are saying, but unfortunately the impact on a number of children is very, very severe. So, if you're looking at, in terms of socialization, children that spend an inordinate amount of time on Mixit and using technology have a limited social circle in terms of face-to-face interaction.
And what's the consequence of that?
Well, it means that there's no feedback loop in terms of being able to observe body language and able to, to kind of get feedback from your surroundings in terms of how you're presenting yourself. So it does leave the child who's perhaps a little unsocialized wide open to misinterpreting and himself socially in relation to others.
Stephen Ambrose from Worldwide Works, do you agree with Lynn Kaywood? Is she overstating it slightly when she says we might be creating a generation of social zombies?
I think she is overstating it somewhat. She's quite right in one respect. There are a new set of skills that need to be taught to the younger generation. Technology, as I said, technology for them is a very different thing to technology for the older generation. And I think the biggest challenge that most of the older generation have is they don't actually understand what the uses and what the pros and cons of this technology is. They don't understand the technology itself. And it's very difficult to instill the right sort of attitudes, the right sort of behaviors, if you yourself have no understanding of what the actual uses are. It's easy to say you spend too much time on the internet. The problem is a couple of years ago, people spent too much time watching TV or too much time indoors. There's always something that you can say about these things. But I think that everybody, the older generation and certainly the younger generation, need to understand that everything comes with a consequence one way or the other. And it has to be. I think that's where Lynn is quite right. The adults, the older generation, the people who give leadership to the younger people, have to understand the technology firstly, and secondly, have to regulate its use in a manner that it's positive and point out the negatives in a way that at least the younger people can deal with.
Roman Thomas, I think I've just seen the loophole in our discussion this morning is that this entire subject is being addressed by people who I'm assuming are 30, 35 plus. Perhaps it would have been instructive to get a 12 or a 14-year-old on the program. Hopefully they are at school this morning. But I think Stephen Ambrose makes a very important point. To what extent is this debate being driven by fear as far as the older generation is concerned? We simply don't know. We're not plugged in enough.
Yeah. You know what I say, Jeremy, is when I do my talks at the schools and churches across the country, is that the parents see all the negatives and the kids see all the benefits. And so the purpose of my talks and awareness campaigns is to bring them together so that gap in communication is closer.
Have you found the common ground?
I have found a common ground. So it works exceptionally well when I'm able to talk to both the children and the parents at the same time, because when they leave, they can talk on the same level. Because previously parents were so paranoid they would go to the extreme, or they would be totally ignorant and say, my kid doesn't do this, my kid's not involved in this.
Of course, all our children are perfect, aren't they? 21 minutes past 8 o'clock, our After 8 debate this morning. We're asking this question, social networking tools. We're kind of lumping them all together, Mixit, MySpace, Facebook. Are they retarding our children's ability to communicate? If you'd like to join in the discussion, I see Esther and Pele have already done so. Give us a call on 0891 104 208. You can also text us this morning on 34701.
Do you know if you could get the same medical aid benefits from SpectraMed for less than you pay now? I'm John Rowan, and I'd like you to call Spectromed for a comparative quotation in less than 5 minutes on 0861 Spectra.
Spectromed, maximizing your medical aid.
AM Live on SAFM.
22 minutes past 8 on this Tuesday morning. Our After 8 debate continues. Let's go to Pinetown in KwaZulu-Natal. Esther, good morning to you, ma'am.
Good morning, Jeremy. I'm Esther Borden from Pinetown. Good morning, listeners. I agree with what all your panelists have said. Jeremy, it boils down to family values. Parents today are quite happy to indulge in technology for their children because they see it as an opportunity which they themselves missed. Quite frankly, some of the technology terrifies me, and of course I'm an older person. How can I, as an older person who is literally terrified of some of the technology, know what damage it's going to do to a young person who may be in my charge? On the other hand, parents sometimes don't set the good example either. I mean, fathers and mothers come home and we watch our television, which is the simplest of all technologies. And what do? The first thing they do is they go to alcohol, then they get onto their laptops or their pocketbooks or whatever they call it, and they have these secret liaisons. And so to children today, finding mischief on technology is just a way of life.
All right, Esther, thank you very much indeed. East London, Pele, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Go ahead.
I think the advancement in cyber trade, you know, and cyber ways, yes, definitely we cannot do away with it. But I'm a principal, I'm a teacher in a school. What I have seen within the learners is that this is, as you said, it's, you know, it's only affecting one-dimensional way. That you don't find a child who is using the SMS or anything for a progressive purpose. Most cases, it's actually in one terrain. And that terrain is not the most appropriate terrain, you know. So I feel that definitely this is really affecting the social cohesion within the school situation, you know.
All right, Pele, thank you very much indeed for the point. Let's go to C-Point, Cape Town. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jeremy, and to your guests. Just my comment here. This technology has only been available for the last maybe year and a half or two. The studies done in the past in connection with children watching TV, particularly in Britain and the USA, was only done 20, 30 years after TV became a standard in everyone's homes. And then it's well documented that this caused a tremendous amount of damage to the learning capacity of children who sat in front of TV for 5, 6, 7 hours a day. From what I understand, many kids today are spending far, far more time, particularly up to 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, on Mixit, Facebook, and all of these modern technology things. They'll probably only do studies in 10 or 15 years' time. It's probably then going to be too late to see what damage has been done. Studies into social activities like this only take place years after the things are invented. They never take place immediately. I wonder what's going to be the effect in 10, 15 years' time.
Roman Thomas, do you want to respond to that? To what extent would this impact on the learning process? I think Tony makes a very valid point.
This is actually a very important point, Jeremy. I've come across some new research in the last month or so which talks specifically about cognitive abilities, ability to retain information, and things like ADD. And there was research published in 2001 by Myers and Rubenstein and reported in CNN that talks about how switching between tasks, trying to do multitasking, and the more complex the task, the more you lose your potential productivity. It can damage your ability or reduce your ability by up to 20 to 40%. And, you know, I think about what happened to my sister. She did matric last year, and she always studied with her cell phone next to her, so checking messages, listening to music, okay, and her marks dropped every time she did an exam, and she scraped through on the final exams. So this is having I'm leaning on the side of caution here, in the long term having a negative impact.
Having said that, Stephen Ambrose from Worldwide Works, there's got to be an upside, surely.
Well, the upside essentially is that technology is actually bringing a lot of people a lot closer. Information is becoming a lot more widely available. And a lot of the social networking sites are creating dialogues that in the past would have either remained hidden or would never have been discussed. So,
but what sort of dialogue, Stephen?
Well, for example, I've got a young teenage son, and he's on Facebook. He's created websites. He's actually ended up having conversations with so-called people in Palestine, terrorists, things like that. and expressing himself, hearing their side of stories. It's creating a world which is a lot smaller than it's ever been before.
But I would suggest, Ramon Thomas, that maybe Stephen Ambrose's son is the exception. A lot of the dialogue that I've seen is fluff and completely meaningless.
Most of it is. There was actually a book written called Living a Life Through the Screen, and it talks about how literally your time is flushed down the drain because you can never get that time back. And, like, you know, two, three hours pass, and you wonder, like, what have I actually accomplished with my time?
Fakie in Cape Town, good morning to you.
Thank you very much. I find that Mixit makes my children antisocial. At first, I grappled with the attempt to ban them from using Mixit. But I realize that it's not fair to them, and that I'm not actually managing, because then they would at night sneak and do. I would discover that they do mix it late at night in their bed. So I've allocated evening time for 30 minutes each for each one of them after they have had dinner and done schoolwork, and back then there is 30 minutes for their mix it and kind of things. But also when they communicate with SMSs and mix it, I realize that they use a lot of shorthand, which is prohibiting, in fact, their spelling abilities, etc. So I've asked them to, even if it costs more when they send SMSs, to spell correctly and spell their words in full, Jeremy. The other thing that I realize it's making my teenage daughter antisocial is music, because she was playing loud music in the house. Then when I complain, she resorts to using the earphones, and then she sits with the earphones for 2 hours, even if she's non-communicative. So I had to apply a rule also in terms of when and how she can play her music in terms of the... In fact, even the use of internet, I allocate time for the weekends. If it is a school project, they must do it at school under the supervision of a teacher, or they must give me information that I must download for them at work. So I find it... making them very uncommunicative and antisocial, but since I regulated the time, it has become better.
Thank you, Mentor, ANC MP in Cape Town. Thank you. Lynn Kaywood from Childline, you were listening to that. Is that a mum that's being over-prescriptive?
I think she's being very, very realistic and is taking the necessary steps to ensure that her children have a healthy, balanced life.
But you can't ban this stuff, can you?
Well, you know, there is that adage that what you ban in life becomes more attractive. Mm. So banning Mixit is probably, you know, going to have the reverse impact on the younger generation. And so I do think that open discussions, communication, sharing your family values with your child, being, you know, open about the potential harmful effects, and helping them to, you know, come to a point of self-discipline around the issue is ultimately what you want to achieve.
I'm just so delighted, Lynn Kaywood, that Fakie Mentor has adopted the principle of good spelling. I just have this mental picture of the child with a cell phone and a dictionary. I don't think it's quite happening that way, but at least there's got to be some adherence to good language as well. Just before our 8:30 news break, in Freiburg, Pat, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jeremy. Mm. My own experience of this Mixit is that it is in many ways like sugar, very legal, highly addictive, and not good for our health. And in a way, I think that from my own research, I mean, cell phones can lead to brain cancer, but the people who know about this do not take this seriously.
Well, Pat, that hasn't been proven. We know
that. No, I've done the research, and the argument, at least from a scientific point of view, is valid, that this is things that we are going to find out later, but there is evidence that this technology actually affect our health negatively. But on the other hand, I think that although the social lives of children change, and this is bad for me as a parent. I've seen it.
All right, Pat, thank you very much. In Freiburg, part two of our After 8 debate continues after our 8:30 news break. The details with Rafil Nyani.
Good morning. Ekurhuleni Metro Police and Mamelodi Sundowns are still withholding the name of the Sundowns player killed in an accident near Alberton, southeast of Johannesburg last night. Residents of Protea South in Soweto are protesting on the old Potchefstroom Road again this morning, and the road has also been closed. A police officer has been shot dead in Guguletu on the Cape Flats. Police spokesperson Billy Jones says the 32-year-old officer was based at the Guguletu police station and was shot when she and a colleague bought food at a local takeaway. Some ANC allies have strongly criticized the party's national chairperson, Defense Minister Musiwa Lekota, for public comments that he made about the ANC struggle song Umshini Wami and the death toll from two bombs exploded in the Pakistani city of Rawalpindi has risen to 24 with 66 people injured. That's the end of this morning's headline wrap. The next full update is at 9 o'clock.
AM Live on SAFM.
And continuing now with the AM Live Traffic Watch. Rob Byrne, good morning to you again.
It's very good morning, everyone. The trip down through Pretoria on the N1 southbound remains busy. There was an earlier collision cleared away a long time ago between the Rigel Avenue off-ramp and the R21. Traffic did back up as a result of that. And there's also a broken down crane truck slowing traffic a little bit further south as you go in towards the R21, the airport exit. So that N1 certainly coming down from Atterbury Road towards the R21 exit is just slow moving this morning. On deck at Hendrik Potgieter in Florida, there's just been a collision there and local protest action continues in Protea South. Avoid the old Potchefstroom Road and the N12 Link Road to avoid traffic disruption in that area. Durban this morning, the Western Freeway is under a lot of pressure between Spaghetti Junction and Central Durban. The problem has been a very nasty accident at the old Dutch Road split. That split off had been closed and traffic detouring into the CBD via the Commercial Road off-ramp. So just very sluggish traffic and a long line of it on the Western Freeway towards Central Durban. Also a broken down truck top of Fields Hill. It's on the M13 westbound, just causing an obstruction for motorists going out towards the Hillcrest side this morning. And then in Cape Town, traffic lights have been short timing at the bottom end of the M3 at Steenberg Road. Just watch for a little bit of a backlog of traffic around there, and the train service between Belleville and Cape Town remains subject to delays of up to 15 minutes. That's due to faulty points on that part of the Cape Town Metro Rail service. That's the latest. Rob Byrne, SAFM Traffic Watch.
Between 9 and 12 o'clock today, our conversation continues on SAFM. Morning Talk is presented by Xolani Gwala, and he's with us now.
A very good morning to you, Jeremy. On Morning Talk this morning, the Independent Democrats saying they have not so far suffered as predicted in this year's floor-crossing winter period. We'll chat to ID leader Patricia de Lille a little later here on the show. Also on Morning Talk, a disappointing performance by South Africa's athletes at the World Championships in Osaka, Japan, where the team returned empty-handed. But Chief of the Athletics in South Africa, Leonard Chwene, saying his athletes did as well as they could. We'll check with him. Also get comment from our listeners. Brian Hirsch will talk investments after the news at 9:30. These are just some of the stories on Morning Talk this morning. Jeremy?
Our After 8 debate continues on SAFM this morning, also on SABC News International, as we ask this question. Online social networking tools, Mixit, MySpace, Facebook, are they retarding our children's ability to communicate? Let me reintroduce our guests. Ramon Thomas, Managing Director of NetEducation. It's an online blogging website. Lynn Kaywood, Director of Childline here in Gauteng. And Stephen Ambrose, Director of Strategy at the agency Worldwide Works. If you'd like to join in our discussion this morning, 0891 104 208. You can also text us as well on 34701. Ramon Thomas, let me come back to you and let's go back to the original premise of our discussion, if I can. To what extent is this really having an ability on our, having an impact, should I say, on our ability to communicate, particularly with the under 20s? Have they lost the plot?
You know, Jeremy, the more and more I'm studying this and gathering first-hand case studies across the country, I can see the impact, okay? And so there's some well-known research about communication that says only 7% of communication is the actual words we speak, 33% is voice tone, and another 60% is body language. Mm. So when you communicate through a screen, whether it's a cell phone or a computer, you're only using 7%. But now you think in terms of sensory perception. Okay, we have five senses. And again, we're missing out on smell, hearing, taste, and touch. Because if you can believe that using your eyes, looking at a screen, is using your that particular sense, you're missing out on 80% of your possible sensory perception. And you think about how, you know, things were before this technology became so mainstream. You know, people used to do a lot more things that were a lot more social and engaged physically. And you know, I think that actually allows us to make better decisions because we're using all our senses. Now, the less of our senses we use, I think the worse our decision-making capabilities.
Lynn Kaywood, what impact on relationships, either relationships between peer groups themselves and also relationships up the chain between parents and children? Surely that must also have a negative impact.
Well, once again, there is a positive aspect to it in terms of communication and information made freely available. But I think we do need to locate this whole debate within the context that we currently find ourselves in South Africa. And, you know, as I said earlier, there's been an absolute explosion of sexually explicit material everywhere. You know, you're looking at a situation where 42% of boys and 43% of girls reported on a self-disclosure questionnaire that they had, you know, experienced some form of sexual abuse before the age of 18. That is a very high statistic. You're also looking at one-third of girls reporting teenage pregnancy. That's a Stats South Africa statistic. You know, 70% of children stumbling across porn sites. So we're living in a time where sexuality is all around us, and there are huge consequences to young people engaging in premature sexuality in terms of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. So it could potentially be, you know, kind of fatal in the long term. So I think we do need to be extraordinarily responsible about this because, you know, obviously receiving messages or images of pornography or child pornography or violence and aggression amongst children kind of tends to normalize that kind of behavior. And once it's entrenched in a young person's mind that this is normal behavior, obviously young people are, you know, developing sexual beings themselves, and we hope that this will grow in a sort of unfolding and beautiful way, but unfortunately it's not happening that way for you know, 40% of our children.
Stephen Ambrose, in your opinion then, how should parents be exercising that responsibility that Lynn Kaywood talks about?
Well, essentially, I don't believe that any young person below the age of, let's say, 16 or 70 should have completely unrestricted access to any technology, be it TV. You know, the context of this whole thing is that essentially Mixit, all these new technologies are new ways of doing old things. They're not particularly new. I mean, there used to be a good example for in this regard is essentially most sexually explicit TV programs are after 10 o'clock at night or been allowed after 10 o'clock at night simply because they expect younger people not to be viewing at that time. But the fact is that information is available. It's out there. If you've got a PVR in the home, it can be recorded and watched at any time. So, in essence, I just believe that parents, one of the duties of parents is to monitor and to observe what your children do in all social settings, whether it's face-to-face, whether it's over Mixit, whether it's online.
Well, how would you audit communication over Facebook, for instance?
I think it goes back to a lot of family values. The one caller actually made a very good point. It's about family values.
But we know we have a problem, Stephen Ambrose, in this country with that particular notion, don't we?
Yes, society has a problem in general, but our statistics, Worldwide Works, shows that generally it's the upper end of the market that has unrestricted access to these new technologies, not so much with Mixit. I mean, Mixit has over 4 million users at present, and they're not restricted to any social groups. They're across the entire population. But in essence, I believe that by having a dialogue with your children, understanding the pros and the cons of the technology, from an adult's perspective, and at least trying to give the younger people the tools to understand what is appropriate and what is inappropriate will make them far more aware of the dangers of what's going on.
I think we're getting somewhere as well, and I'm going to ask Raman Thomas in just a moment to unpack what that dialogue should actually entail. Stephen Ambrose, I'm going to put you back to our board. I think we can get you on a better line because you seem to be intermittent. At least I'm having difficulty with that.
All right.
So we'll get back to you in just a moment. To Aaron, Stephen, Prophet OJ, and Alika, I'm going to get to you in just a moment as our After Eight debate continues this morning. We're asking this question: online social networking tools, are they retarding our children's ability to communicate? It's 20 minutes to 9.
We're at the Opera House, where concert pianist Vladimir Belikov will play Chopin's Minute Waltz. He will perform while lying on the piano stool with his back to the piano, reaching over his head to play. Mr. Belikov is an employee at Symmetry Multi-Manager, where he's perfected this precise balance of performance and security. Symmetry's research, blending, and monitoring of their specialist managers backed by Old Mutual is a fine balance focused on producing great results. And, oh, he started. What fantastic skill. For tailored investment strategies, contact your fund consultant or visit symmetry.co.za. Symmetry Multi-Manager is a division of the Old Mutual Life Assurance Company, South Africa Limited, a licensed financial services provider, a member of the Old Mutual Investment Group.
Imagine if running a business was as easy as 123, or 321, or the number you choose. With smart access from Telkom Business, running your business really is as easy as, well, the number you choose. Smart access lets you choose one contact number to make your business easier to reach, no matter how big it is, where it's located, or how many branches you have. Your business has only one name. So, why shouldn't it have one contact number? Call Smart Access on 08000 Smart. Telkom Business. The network that makes business work.
AM Live on SAFM.
Our After Eight debate continues this morning. Social networking tools, we're examining them in some detail this morning, and we're asking what sort of impact this is having on our children's ability to communicate. Edan Ayal from mobileq&a.com, good morning to you. You've listened to the debate for the past 10 minutes or so. How worried are you?
Good morning, Jeremy. I'll be honest with you. There's positive and negative aspects to any style of sort of technology like this. And it's a little bit of a long story, but let me just use it as an analogy. We were contacted by concerned parents about a month or two ago where their child was talking to someone on Mixit, and the child blanked out at some stage, and there may or may have not been an issue of abuse. But there are entities to which people can turn to, such as our website, which is mobileq&a.com, which is a completely free service, and they turned to us. We contacted the police with them. We contacted Mixit. We helped them to at least achieve some kind of, at least get some kind of information about what occurred. And I think that, firstly, we have those kind of services available, and education is so super important. We've got to educate people that there are services like that they can turn to, where there are panels of experts which are willing to help them chat people free, as well as a combination of self-policing as well within the chat rooms. Very often with an IRC, which has been running for 10 years, when you've got 20 people inside a chat room, they self-police themselves. And when something occurs, well, everyone sort of comes to the party and starts warning people about that particular errant user. So I think it's a combination of all these aspects which are required. And, of course, if you've got companies which are profiting from a service like Mixit, whether it's going to be the cellular solution providers as well as Mixit themselves, everyone needs to sort of come together, create education programs, and it's a responsibility on everybody's behalf to sort of help this occur. But it's like opening the Pandora's box. And you cannot police freedom of speech.
Mm. All right, Aaron Ayle, thank you very much indeed. Now, Stephen Otto, you spokesperson for the Independent Democrats. Your party leader is quoted as saying about Mixit that this has gone on too long. It's time for government to intervene to protect our most vulnerable. The right to freedom of expression, says Patricia DeLille, is not absolute. So you have fairly strong views on this.
Yes, we do. I'm Patricia DeLille's spokesperson, and it is true that we've called for some regulation. It is happening in 11 countries around the world at this stage, and we actually in the research stages of getting a process together that will culminate in a conference.
But Ramon Thomas told us earlier that it's impossible to regulate Mixit because of the sheer volume.
Not Mixit specifically, but other technologies are regulated, and in South Africa specifically with Mixit, we need to look at this as well. I mean, We've got people preying on some of our children, at least. There's this anonymity that's a problem. And so, you know, we have to look at this. And
What sort of regulation, Stephen Otto, are you advocating then?
Well, at this point, you know, we'd be jumping the gun by talking about specific regulations. We, as I said, we're in the research stages. And at this conference, we'd get our heads together, get experts from you know, the field of technology and parents' organizations and come up with solutions.
It sounds to me, Stephen Otto, and I say this with the greatest respect, that you have no idea at all as to how you'd like to regulate it.
Well, we have some ideas, but at this point, as I said, it would be jumping the gun. We need to come together with the experts in the industry. We don't know everything about technology. And we're looking at other countries, and we need to come up with solutions. That's we've announced that already, and unfortunately at this point, no, we can't come up with specific solutions.
Right. Appreciate the call. Raman Thomas, two issues for you. One, is it, in fact, three. One, is it possible to regulate across the board, as Stephen Otter is suggesting? Two, is it a freedom of expression institute? And I think the third point is, I think you made a little earlier, is the genie not out the bottle? Pandora's box is open, to use all those cliches, that we're too far down the road on this.
Well, firstly, I want to say that I actually made an offer through Vincent Gore to do a blogging seminar for the ID, and it was declined. Okay, so I wonder how serious they really are about educating themselves.
I presume the offer still stands.
The offer still stands. So just on a couple of issues, you mentioned a couple of issues there, Jeremy. I think the genie is out of the bottle. The first thing that I would say is that the technology companies, this is Mixit, who have started in a small way, the cell phone companies, all the internet companies from MWeb, through all the ISPs, can do a lot more when it comes to education and awareness. You know, I have criticized them all for a very long time because they assume that the consumers, the clients, the people out there actually know how to do it. And if you look at the research from Worldwide Works, it is only the sort of upper echelons, the people with the higher incomes, that do have sufficient experience with it to have developed enough skills to regulate and use and have what I call good online etiquette when it comes to using this technology.
Is it the freedom of expression debate?
No, I don't think it's about freedom of expression. It's about understanding what the technology is able to do and understanding, again, like, you know, the title of my talks is Beyond the Positive and the Negative, the reality of the Mixit Mania. It's seeing both sides of it. And then if you, as a parent or a teacher or a guardian, can give the kids practical things to do that has to do with what you're trying to, you know, convey to them, they will start doing more of that. But most parents and teachers, but primarily parents, I think, are just so ignorant about this, and therefore they don't even know how to start the conversation, how to open up, and the kids shy away from wanting to share with their parents.
I do want to come back to that as well, and perhaps a checklist of how parents can open that dialogue. Mafikeng, Prophet OJ, regular caller, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jeremy. As usual, Prophet OJ, saved by the blood of Jesus. My answer to your question, Jeremy, is yes. And my yes does not suggest that these instruments must be abolished or banned, not at all. The problem the society or the community is actually faced here is that the information circulation market is commercial. Therefore, the morality there is what we need to address, the information circulation market. Secondly, we need to set up educational programs whereby our family members could be educated to differentiate between the bad and the wrong. In other words, the wrong and the good. In other words, to improve our taste buds so that our kids, when they go to these things, whether it is a television, an internet, or a cell phone, he or she must be knowing the information that he or she wants to get out of that for her own personal, economic, or personal development.
All right, Prophet OJ, thank you. Port Elizabeth, Alec, good morning to you.
Hi, Jeremy, and your panel, man. Just a couple of quick ones. I think this drives into your Sunday morning program as far as marketing ethics goes, and perhaps it's a topic you might want to discuss there, because I think that the case for this technology appears to be the profit motive, because there seems to be an overwhelming volume of evidence against it. And I think some other quick other point that you touched on, that language is the medium of thought, and in this cryptographic type of style of communicating can only lead to some kind of underdevelopment.
Of course, we develop an entirely new language.
Well, I think that's doubtful, because any useful language is evolutionary by its nature. So, I suppose if we develop it, but I doubt it, I don't see that, because it seems to be becoming more cryptic and less developed, and that impedes our ability to think. And I think that, just following on that point, that technology perhaps has proven, and I think one of your earlier panel members mentioned right on the money, that human nature and psychology hasn't changed, or its capacity hasn't changed. It's just the technology, but all the technology is doing is proliferating, if one might call it that, certain and evils, and the profit motive underlies that, because obviously there's economic exploitation, never mind all the vices exploitation. And the blind eye seems to be turned to the social effects of these technologies in the interests of economics, and I think we see that in a broader case in our society. And then I think it comes back to your program about drugs early on in the week or last week, where people, the issue of choice, people have proved, I think, forever that, you know, when there's some kind of psychosis, which gives rise to a dependency and some kind of behavior that is of such akin, then it's very difficult for them to act and think objectively in their own interest, and perhaps some degree of regulation is needed. And I'm not sure if the issue of parenting is the solution. It might be part of it, but I don't think it's the solution.
All right. Alec, as always, your contribution is valid, and I appreciate it. Lynn Kaywood from Childline, is this could this be an addiction?
Absolutely. I mean, the evidence has indicated that there are a number of young people that are addicted to this form of communication. And I just want to share one case study that we dealt with in Gauteng. It was a young boy of about 11. He was referred to us for sexual violations against his younger sister. It transpired that he was addicted to Mixit, that he had identified himself as a young, macho, up-and-coming, very highly sexualized young lad. But he was living completely in the realm of his fantasy, which was promoted by his use of technology. And it was very, very difficult to bring this young boy back from, you know, this kind of never-never land where he had located himself within cyberspace, and to help him to deal with the reality.
Tragic story, but surely the exception rather than the rule.
Well, we don't know, because it's still a very young technology, and we're not at this stage, we haven't done the research to indicate how, you know, broadly this technology is going to impact on the growing development of young people.
All right, I'm going to go around the panel one more time just to get some closing thoughts on this topic this morning, and I hope that you have found it as fascinating as I have. But before that, in Johannesburg, Karabo, good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I agree that human nature has, in essence, not changed, and the technology in itself is neutral. It is human nature that is coloring it, in that sense that the naive will go in essence, kids are falling into that category, will go for that which appeals. And in essence, it appeals to the negative side of humanity, which, in simple terms, sin is the basis. And to get this sorted out, the burden lies with parents more than anything, to lay the proper foundation, family values, and so forth.
All right, let's talk about those foundations. And Karabo, thank you very much indeed. Ramon Thomas, back to you. Let's assume that it's important that a dialogue happens now between parents and children. And I also know that this entire debate has another commercial and workplace aspect as well that we haven't even touched on this morning. But let's focus this on the parent-child dynamic, if we can. Where would you begin that dialogue?
Well, the dialogue needs to begin with awareness from both the parents and the children, like I said. So the children need to realize more of the risks and the dangers, which they don't. And the parents need to realize more of the benefits. And so one of the things that came out when I first started talking about this on radio was a parent said that in the family they started using Mixit to communicate. Okay, so... And then just in terms of...
That's a sad day, surely, when you're sitting around the dining room table using Mixit to communicate with each other. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, one father said that, you know, he has Mixit on his cell phone, so whenever he sees his son is on for more than an hour, he messages him from his bedroom into his son's bedroom and says, like, you know, time to go do your homework or time to go to bed.
Surely you knock on the bedroom door and take the cell phone away.
Yeah, I think in extreme cases you should. But just some of the major pitfalls and maybe what to do about them. The first one is what Lynn touched on, online addiction. Now, there was a study from Stanford University that said about 13% of Americans are experiencing some kind of online addiction. So if you do a rough calculation, that's over 650,000 Mixit users. It's over 300,000 Facebook users that are experiencing some kind of addiction. Okay, so be aware of that. And what you need to do is try and replace the activity with something else. Something that they can't use their cell phone with. I mean, it's really difficult for me to say exactly what. You know, you'll see symptoms of antisocial behavior, becoming more introverted, and maybe losing interest in things that they used to be passionate about. Secondly, I would say...
What's the consequence of that? What could that lead to?
Really just, you know, becoming more withdrawn and going
insular
more... Insular and isolating. And that could lead to... I would say incidence of depression eventually, okay, and then that has a direct link with suicide, okay. So it leads me to my next point of cyberbullying, which also there's a growing number of incidents on cyberbullying. And if people don't take it very seriously, you know, there are many teenagers that because parents or teachers or nobody believed them that were being bullied or harassed, they ended up committing suicide. So it's a very serious problem. Thirdly, I would say, the issue of you know, social skills, which we've all talked about before. It's important to set boundaries and strike a balance so that kids can have sufficient time to develop social skills, especially when it comes to relationships. The biggest danger I'm seeing, which probably agrees with Lynn 100%, is the accelerated development of relationships in the teenage years, which causes them to go from one relationship to the next, and they don't learn the lessons that they really need to learn. And I would say probably then looking at scams and fraud, there is a potential for that. So talk to the kids about that. You know, there's no link between Mixit and the banking system, but in the future there may be.
Stephen Ambrose from Worldwide Works. We've left this all too late, haven't we?
I don't think so. Again, I really don't think so. I think that you can't throw you can't mix the message with the technology. The basic concepts still apply, and the technology may accelerate certain things and may highlight certain issues in society that were perhaps hidden before. But I don't believe there's anything terribly new here. And as I said earlier, there's always been a generation gap. There was always this issue that young people didn't understand older people and older people didn't understand young people. It was music, it was TV, it was video games.
But conventional wisdom might have it that gap has got a lot wider.
I don't think so. I think technology in many ways has brought that gap a lot closer. I believe that communication, however it's engaged in, can only be a good thing if it's handled in the correct context and in the correct way. So I think all the panel members and everybody has come to a sort of consensus here in saying that there needs to be a constant dialogue face-to-face with parents. Parents and people in authority need to take responsibility for the effects that new technologies are having on our society.
Stephen Ambrose, I'm going to leave it there with you and give Lynn Kaywood from Childline the last word on this. All well and good, Lynn Kaywood, but are teenagers necessarily receptive to that message?
Exactly, and I mean, I want to agree with Stephen that it is absolutely critical that everybody takes responsibility for utilizing this technology in the most effective kind of way and in a way that doesn't render our children more vulnerable to particularly sexual predators. And that includes the service providers, it includes government, and government is going to regulate this industry if it doesn't regulate itself. So this, I think, is a window of opportunity for the people that are making a lot of money out of this this service to regulate themselves. Otherwise, government is going to step in. You know, parents do have to take some responsibility, but it's incredibly difficult for the adult generation that is technologically disadvantaged and to some extent phobic to take that on board. But we do have to take responsibility for the kind of world that we create for the next generation.
And Lynn Kaywood, we're going to leave it there from Childline, along with Ramon Thomas from NetEducation and Stephen Ambrose from Worldwide Works. A fascinating discourse today. Thank you all for participating. On our team today, Sesanda Jonas, along with Maruma Kekana, Lerato Khotleng, Hlengiwe Mabasu, and Rochelle Seaton-Rogers. Producing our After 8 debate today, and Ntombi Mia, technical producer this morning, Mark Preller, senior producers Mana Ledi Matabohi and Lebohang Monomaholo, executive producers Stephen Lang and Tandanani Dlamini. I'm Jeremy Maggs. Goodbye to you. Thank you for listening.